I'd like to convene the Ways and Means Committee, and as you know, we are convening after Senate Finance because Mr. Joe Kelly, wasn't able to be in two places at the same time, and Ms. Idy is on vacation right now, and so obviously that division or department, whatever we would call it, is relatively few in number. So to have his expertise, and I know he was at the table quite a while on the Senate side because I sat in, the way I think we'll proceed this morning then is we'll ask the chief author to give us an update on House File 1, that's Representative Poppy, and then we'll ask Mr. Kelly to come forward and basically, I think the remarks you made before the Senate would be, Senate Finance would be appropriate if you want to kind of follow that same line, and then we'll open it up to questions. So, Representative Poppy moves that Special Session House File 1 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. So, Representative Poppy, if you want to give us a quick outline of the bill, and then we'll turn to Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is House File 1, the disaster bill of the special session. It's a result of storm damage from June 20th through the 26th in 2013. It resulted from windstorms, thunderstorms, hard rain, hail, flooding, which resulted in downed trees, road washouts, power outages, including 600,000 people who were without power. It was the largest power outage we've seen. There were 77 mile per hour winds, equivalent to a hurricane category 1. 23 counties were impacted, but 18 of those counties met the damage threshold to meet the FEMA requirements. The total damages are approximately $18 million, including 62 townships, which suffered $4.3 million in damages. The 18 counties extended from Wilkin County, which is in central western Minnesota, to the southeasternmost county of Minnesota, Houston. All of the 18 counties, as I mentioned before, reached the FEMA threshold. But the hardest hit in southeasternmost county, Houston County, had damage of $6.5 million. For a county that has roughly 19,000 residents, which means that their damage is equivalent to a per capita loss of $339.55 per person. FEMA declares their emergencies based on the counties meeting the threshold, not cities. And although that may be seen as not necessarily fair, it has been consistent, and it is how we are operating with House File 1. There are seven categories of FEMA-eligible activities or expenses. A and B, the debris removal and emergency protective measures, are seen as emergency. Categories C through G, which include roads and bridges, public buildings, water, utilities, and park and recreation, are considered permanent and may take longer to address. I will now bring up Mr. Kelly, and he'll be able to, he's the Deputy Director of Department of Public Safety, and he'll be able to describe what the process is.
Hey, welcome, Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, Representative Poppy. For the record, my name is Joe Kelly. I am the Deputy Director for the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management at the Department of Public Safety. Representative Poppy did a good job of describing the event and the scope of the damage. I'm going to talk a little bit about the process that began shortly after the disaster subsided. After reviewing the initial damage assessments from the counties, so each county that was impacted, their emergency management director communicated with their communities and submitted an initial estimate of the damage to their counties consistent with the categories that Representative Poppy outlined for you. After reviewing that, Director Idy sent a letter to FEMA requesting that FEMA send a team to Minnesota to participate in a formal preliminary damage assessment, or as we refer to it, the PDA. During the week of July 8th, a joint state and federal team fanned out across the impacted areas to assess the damage and determine if the disaster was beyond the scope of the state to manage without federal assistance. FEMA evaluates the financial impact of disasters on two levels. To be eligible for a federal major disaster declaration, the state must first exceed an uninsured damage indicator of $1.37 per capita, or for Minnesota, cumulatively, $7.266 million. Second, each affected county must exceed a damage indicator of $3.45 per capita to be designated. So if the state accumulates $7.266 million or more in damages, it may be declared a major disaster. To be eligible for aid, because the aid goes down into the counties and the communities, each county has to meet their $3.45 damage indicator threshold to be designated. So state is declared and the counties are designated. As Representative Poppe mentioned, this PDE identified nearly $18 million in eligible damages, which is almost 2.5 times our state indicator. She talked about Houston County, which had essentially 100 times its indicator, to give you an idea of the scope, the severity of the disaster down in that county. Based on the results of that preliminary damage assessment, the accumulation of that $18 million in damage, Governor Dayton wrote a letter to President Obama requesting a major disaster declaration, and the President formally declared that disaster on July 25th. Federal disaster relief was approved in two forms for Minnesota for this event. The first is what we refer to as public assistance. That deals with the costs, helps with the costs of debris removal, emergency response, and repairs to public infrastructure in the 18 designated counties. The second form of disaster aid was in hazard mitigation on a statewide basis. So all counties in Minnesota are eligible and have available to them the hazard mitigation portion of the disaster relief that comes from the federal government. The federal government agrees to pay 75% of actual eligible costs on a reimbursement basis. We talk a lot about assessments and estimates, but in the end, the federal government is agreeing to pay 75% of the actual documented costs on a reimbursement basis. State and local governments are responsible for the remaining 25%. And for this disaster, the non-federal share is estimated at the $4.5 million that are part of the bill. To date, FEMA and Homeland Security Emergency Management staff have presented applicant briefings to facilitate requests for public assistance. We've gone out and conducted kickoff meetings, working with applicants to begin what we call project formulation. Future actions include completing these repair projects or the reimbursement process, collecting documentation and receipts, making payments to the applicants, closing out each project, and ultimately closing out the assistance program for this disaster. For context, Minnesota has received 19 major disaster declarations since 2000, including 6 in the last 3 years. The cumulative financial burden of those events have strained local government budgets. And since 2007, the legislature has decided that the state will pay the full 25% share. Regardless, we believe the $4.5 million non-federal share will be adequate to match the 75% federal reimbursement. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions of the author or Mr. Kelly at this point? Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That last date again, when was it that we changed the assuming responsibility for 100%? You said, I think you gave
2007, or excuse me. Mr. Chair, Representative, starting back in 2007, the legislature has decided to pick up the full 25% and not go with a split such as 15%, 10%.
Do you recall the discussion at the time why that was done?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't, because I was not with the division at the time. I have a couple of colleagues here today. I don't know if they are in position to answer that question.
And Mr. Chair, the reason I mention that is
The second part of this bill, where we fund some of the non-FEMA eligible expenses for a couple of communities, but also that we fully fund the 25%. And I think it makes worse the issue of those areas that fall just under the threshold. And I've always used my county as the example. I think they fell. I think the they fell 280,000 short. It was 1.45 or something like that. And when we do 100% of it, it makes that discrepancy even worse. If we were expecting all communities to pay some, I think there would be a little more fairness. But because we do 100%, if you fall just above this threshold, we do 100%. If you go just below, we do zero. Based on that, my understanding is that the Association of Minnesota Emergency Managers has asked for a disaster assistance fund if a county falls just short of federal disaster standards. Have you been in touch with that group, and has that been a discussion you've had with them, the Association of Minnesota Emergency Managers?
Mr. Kelly?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman. Yes, we are very familiar and we work closely with the Association of Minnesota Emergency Managers. The Office of the Legislative Auditor completed an audit back in March of 2012. I believe members were received a letter from the Legislative Auditor at the end of last week. And that was one of the recommendations that they made. There were a number of key recommendations relating to either the transferability of funds within a disaster bill or how to cover those disasters where communities, cities and counties suffer damages, but if the state hasn't qualified by virtue of its damage indicator and being receiving a declaration, there are no resources. There are no resources for them. Mr. Chair, Representative, I also believe that that report recommended that the state establish a standard for what the state and local cost share would be so that there would be a reasonable expectation on the part of local officials.
Representative Hausman?
No. I'll save the rest for the floor.
Okay. Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a couple weeks ago we had a hearing and Ms. Idy was here and I had asked for some additional information to be provided by the department regarding the appropriation for the disaster in the last special session last summer and what had happened with those monies and a clearer delineation of how you're funding this bill. After a week had gone by and I hadn't heard anything, we finally got a very limited set of information. While I'm appreciative of that, I still have additional questions and hopefully you might be able to help with those. In the 2012 appropriation, and I don't know if you have a copy of the email that was forwarded by the governor's office to me on the 5th of September. Do you have a copy? Or
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, yes, I do.
Okay, thank you. In the 2012 appropriation, you lay out different funds available currently within the different pots of money to the different agencies. Prior to what's being outlined in this memo, were there fund transfers in that emergency funding package?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, there were, through the Minnesota Recovers Task Force, which does the state interagency coordination of allocating state resources where they're needed, there were some small transfers that were probably completed. I don't know exactly which ones. And then there were some larger ones specifically involving deed that were contemplated. But there have been a number of interagency transfers either completed or that were planned to be done, probably about five or six between agencies from the 2012 special session deal that dealt with the flash flooding.
So if I might, I would still appreciate that information. What I had asked for was fund transfers from that appropriation to try and gauge how accurate we were after spending days meeting with commissioners and hearing what they believed was going to be the need for that disaster. I think, you know, at least I, for one, want to take a peek at what happened after we gave you the money, and in fact, future transfers are also being contemplated or reflected in this memo as well. And then, if I might, ask one additional question.
You want to ask them all at once?
Yeah, if that's okay. All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. And then on the ice storm issue, just for clarification purposes, the money that's being reappropriated in this bill is not FEMA match money, but strictly the additional $250,000 for non-FEMA eligible activities. And if I might, then if that is the case, could you explain to us why we were so off? If we had appropriated $250,000 in May for these needs, and there's still $219,000 there,
Mr. Kelly,
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, your characterization, your description of that appropriation is correct. It was state only money to cover expenses that would be ineligible under FEMA for debris removal. It was estimated at the time that $250,000 was necessary, and as I understand the intent, it was to reimburse homeowners who, ahead of the community debris removal plan, had paid contractors or otherwise incurred expenses to have debris hauled away. If they had waited, you know, a little while or not been had the initiative that they had, somebody would have taken care of that for them for nothing. So that was what was intended with that money. The Minnesota Recovers Task Force only received approximately $31,000 in eligible applications for that money. It's to follow the law. It's a fairly tight, because it was appropriated under Chapter 12A. It was a fairly narrow eligibility of expenses. So simply there were not the amount of eligible applicants that were anticipated when that money was appropriated.
And if I might follow up, thank you, Mr. Chair. So this money was to go directly to homeowners, not local units of government. Is that correct?
Mr. Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, it was intended to reimburse homeowners, but it would as it always does, it would go through the county to the city perhaps, and then to the homeowner. So it would not be any kind of direct business transaction between the department and a homeowner. We would give a grant to the county like we do with all disaster relief. It was just a special pot of money.
Okay, and then just for clarification purposes, I expressed concerns at the last meeting that if we were going beyond the bounds of FEMA eligible 25% match, how are we going to assure that all entities that met the new criteria would be aware of the opportunity and be able to participate? So we've spelled out three or four grants, I believe, to divvy up the $219,000. Were all communities within that disaster contacted to find out what their unreimbursed non-FEMA eligible costs were? And how do we know that this appropriation is fair to all communities within that ice storm area?
Mr. Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, the way the original outreach goes is when the money was appropriated is through the county emergency management directors and down to the cities and townships. How the money was divided, how the remainder of that appropriation was divided, I cannot answer that question. The Department of Public Safety wasn't part of that step.
So if I might, and maybe this the chair knows, but was there an opportunity that we're going to divvy up the remaining $219,000, so everybody in this area, if you have unreimbursed costs, contact so-and-so, or, I mean, how do we know that what was done was fair with the $219,000, or are we just giving money to those that screamed the loudest and happened to show up at a hearing 10 days ago?
Kelly?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I do not know the answer to that question because I was not part of the process to decide that part of this bill.
And Mr. Chair, do you know, did a letter go out to these entities, or how do we know that area, that all communities were treated fairly in divvying up the $219,000?
I don't know the answer to that question. I think the issue was negotiated by the five leaders, the governor and the two minority leaders and the speaker and majority leader in the Senate. I do know that aid for those two counties was talked about long before we had that meeting a couple of weeks ago. I know the governor was quoted in at least two newspaper articles that I read requesting $1 million initially, and the decision was made at that level then to just simply reallocate the remaining $219,000. The role of other communities, I just don't know the answer to that question.
All right, thank you.
I do have one, though. When you say they cleaned up the material right away and they couldn't be reimbursed, I think it was at the previous meeting at some forum, I asked the question because we had done some site visits to southeastern Minnesota, and I think it was the city of Houston, but at least one of the communities down there, they had rolled up their shirt sleeves and started to clean up the refuge from the storm. And there was some question whether FEMA would reimburse them for that because they had done what I'll call the Minnesota thing. You know, they went to work right away in cleaning up their community. And then I was told that in the end they did qualify for FEMA. And was that a different situation than what we're talking about here in terms of why FEMA did not provide some of this assistance for that early cleanup that you described?
Mr. Chair, members, I think there are a couple different issues that we're talking about. One is the issue that was addressed by the appropriation to reimburse by those individuals, households that took the initiative. There's another issue that is confusing, which is when FEMA first told the communities down there about what was going to be covered under debris removal. Under the FEMA rules, they were told that they were going to be covered under a pilot program, which would include all of their regular time as well as overtime by public workers. Unfortunately, FEMA, and regrettably, FEMA made a mistake, and the local coordinating officer found out that she was not authorized to make that program available to the communities in southwest Minnesota, so they had to pull back from that and only settle for that. That's probably, Mr. Chair, when you talk about doing the Minnesota thing, because we always want communities to do what's right, to get their communities on the road to recovery. Don't worry too much about eligibility. So they put their regular public workers in their regular time to work, to clear debris so the community could get on with recovery. Only to find out, unfortunately and regrettably, and it's FEMA's mistake, not ours, and certainly not the communities, that those regular straight time costs were not going to be covered. And that has caused considerable amount of confusion and consternation down in those five counties.
Okay, Representative Dettmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And at our meeting we had a few weeks ago, this committee meeting, one thing that kind of stood out to me, where we had some utilities that came in and spoke. So a co-op, electric co-op, I forget the name of the one that came in, but they had taken a big loss. And looks like the private utilities are only reimbursed the 75% and not the 25%. Is this a FEMA or is this a state policy?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dettmer, the issue with the utilities, and if I could, I'll explain utilities in three categories. First are the for-profit utilities like Xcel Energy. They have insurance. They have emergency reserves. As a for-profit company, they're not eligible. So even this disaster, this current disaster from June, it was the largest power outage in Minnesota history, 600,000 customers at one point without power. None of those expenses borne by Xcel Energy are eligible because they're a for-profit company. Then you get into the two not-for-profits, if you will. One are private nonprofit like Meeker County Rural Electric. That's the gentleman that was there at the working group, sir. And the other are municipal-owned utilities. When you look at Chapter 12 of state statute 12A, it talks about who is eligible to receive the 25% non-federal share, the state money in reimbursement, and it says clearly political subdivisions. So a city-owned power and light company is owned by a political subdivision, a city. They are an eligible applicant. They're in the same business. They are an eligible applicant. But because Meeker County, in this specific instance, electric company or rural electric cooperatives are not political subdivisions, while their costs and their damages are recognized by the federal government, specifically in state law, they are not eligible for the 25% share.
Yeah, and thank you. And Mr. Chair, maybe this is something maybe we should be looking at the state level, because I know talking to this particular co-op, they pay a lot of taxes into the state. And then maybe there's something we should probably be looking at. Thank you.
Yeah, that was, if you recall, the working group discussion. I happened to comment because I was aware that at least two members that I knew of at that point in time were interested in kind of reviewing the whole issue, probably for the next session. Maybe I don't know how much we'll go into that, but I think there are at least some members of the House, I don't know about the Senate, that are interested in reviewing this whole process. Representative Mulray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And now I have two questions, which I only had one at the time. Are we then paying this money to those 501c3s? Because that was a question at the working group that they had never qualified before. Are we some of this money going to them?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mulray, short answer is no.
The
private nonprofits are not eligible applicants under the state 25% under the statute.
That's what I thought.
Representative Mulray,
and Alice seems to have one to the point, I guess.
Isn't there a difference between the first part of the bill and the second? And is your question to the second part of the bill?
To the whole bill.
Exceptions to the rule? Because under those exceptions to the rule in the second part of the bill?
My question was, Mr. Chair, my question was any of the money that we're doing today.
Mr. Chair, representatives, I think if I understand the question correctly, I think the distinction is money that's appropriated specifically for the 25% non-federal share cannot go to, in this case, the rural electric cooperatives. Other state money appropriated for different purposes can. The distinction is the 25% share, and if you look at the disaster bill from the special session last year, there was one article or two article subdivisions that dealt with the non-federal share, and then there were many different subdivisions with amounts of money that were appropriated for other purposes that were not FEMA eligible but deemed to be in the interest of the state. And I think that's the distinction, that the money that's contemplated to be appropriate here, the $4.5 million, that's for the non-federal share and without any other portions of the bill. So, it would certainly be within the legislature's prerogative to appropriate money to pay some of those other expenses. But right now we're prohibited by Chapter 12A to use any of that money that's for the non-federal share, the state match.
Mr. Chair, my other question was, it seems to be a distinction between ice storms and tornado, because there's been a lot of people had tornadoes where the things that are being paid for here that are part private, couldn't get funds from the state, and here they are. Do we have some kind of distinction on ice storms versus tornado damage, or is that just something that's happening? Or
Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mullery, there is no distinction based on hazard or cause of storm. It focuses back on the applicant, whether it's an eligible entity that can receive state and federal assistance, and whether the expenses are eligible. So there should be no connection between the cause of the damage.
Okay, let's see, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I noticed in the spreadsheet that we had for the different entities that would be eligible for funds, there were a couple that were missing that were part of my legislative district. I'm from the Plymouth area, and we were hit pretty hard by that storm in June. Trees down everywhere. It looked like a war zone for quite some time as people were cleaning things up. But the Wayzata School District was not on the list, and neither was the Osseo School District. I had conversations with the Wayzata School District this morning. They had been told that they needed to go through MDE. Apparently, the person that they were working with retired, and there was no communication to give them any information otherwise. So they've been kind of left in limbo land, and they're not on the list. And I'm just concerned. They've got about $300,000 worth of damages. They had one of their schools that got flooded because of this, and they've had to do a lot of cleanup work since then. What kind of opportunities do they have as far as accessing funds so that they can operate their schools and get them up to snuff?
Mr. Chair, Representative, they will have the opportunity, Representative. For some reason, and as I told the Senate, we've had a difficult time capturing all of the school districts for this disaster. The good news, the school districts that you named are in a designated county. So we have the ability, working through the County Emergency Management Director for Hennepin County, we have the ability to add applicants. So they will have the opportunity, and we are tracking 14 schools. Osseo is not one of them, Representative, so I will add that to my list. We're tracking 14 schools. Seven of them are already in the FEMA system, if you will. They're registered applicants. Seven, we are working kind of between the Minnesota Department of Education and the county emergency managers to make sure that they don't get left behind. So we will have the ability, Wayzata School District, if they're otherwise eligible and have eligible expenses, we are very confident that we'll be able to take care of the school districts.
And Mr. Chair, Anderson. I think it might be helpful, given the fact that obviously they've been given some kind of bad information here so far, if you could send me exactly what are the deadlines for them to apply, who do they need to actually contact, because so far the communication hasn't been really great. I'm concerned that Osseo isn't on your radar right now, and I'd like to help you in that regard by giving them the information that they need to. Here's who you contact, this is the right person, and that they won't be left kind of waving in the wind. So if you could probably get me some of that, what applications they need to fill out, and the timelines for that, I'd be more than happy to communicate to them and help you guys out in that regard.
Mr. Kelly, just as a follow-up, because I sat in on the Senate hearing, that question of deadlines came up, and if you could share with this committee what you shared with the Senate on deadlines.
Well, at this point in time, the deadline what we call request for public assistance has closed, but we have the ability to appeal that with good basis, and certainly in the case of the confusion with some of the school districts, I am very confident that working with the federal coordinating officer who is officed here in St. Paul, that we will be successful in adding any and all eligible applicants. So we will work with you. With your permission, Representative, we need to involve the Hennepin County Emergency Management Office in that process. The Department of Education has a role to play, but it does not have a role as far as officially or administratively being able to make those school districts applicants. They're more of a source of information, normally working with us and the county emergency manager saying, hey, just so you know, we heard from Wayzata Schools, they have damages, please get in contact with them. But the default answer, the standard procedure for any entity, including the school districts, is to go through their city and county emergency managers. But we have the ability through that process to add applicants, particularly, I don't want to say easy, but it's much cleaner because Hennepin County is a designated county.
If I recall, as follow-up to my follow-up, when you were before the Senate, though, you said there was not a hard and fast deadline to be added. Is that, did I interpret that correctly?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. There's a standard deadline, and I think it's 30 days after the date of declaration. But for appeals and add-ons, there really is no far end to this. We believe working with the school districts working with the county emergency managers and the Department of Ed, we think we can get this cleaned up, if you will, within the next 30 days.
And I think that's important for everybody to understand, Mr. Kelly. People heard about those two 30-day deadlines, and I think initially a lot of people thought that was hard and fast, and then we've learned at the working group here today with both the Senate and the House that you still can be added on, like you say, with good cause. So, and then there isn't a hard and fast deadline for that purpose. So,
Mr. Chair, that is correct. Thank you. Thank you for that clarification.
I also happen to represent a little bit of the Osseo schools, so I have the same interest you do in that regard. Were you done, Representative Vanderjagt?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, then Representative Paymar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kelly, just a question on the general fund appropriation. Do you have sufficient funding in the Department of Homeland Security to cover all of the implementation and monitoring of the grants to these affected communities, or is some of that general fund money going to the department?
Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Paymar, if I understand the question correctly, all of the funds that are appropriated for these purposes go to the Division of Emergency Management and not to the Department of Public Safety. There's no...
So, Mr. Chair, so within that division, you have enough... Are you going to need any administrative dollars to make sure that all of this grant money is being used the way it's supposed to be used and monitored?
Mr. Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Paymar, we believe we have adequate resources and staff to manage these funds.
Very good. Thank you.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to clarify what you were saying about deadlines, only applies to those counties that have been determined to be eligible, as I understand it. And what after the last meeting, I reached out to the two school districts that are the largest school districts, out of curiosity, and the St. Paul School District had in fact hired a firm to do all of the tree removal, and so they did have a dollar amount. They were not aware that they should have reported that to the county. The Roseville School District answered by saying they had done all of the debris removal internally. In other words, they didn't hire an external firm. Is that still supposed to be quantifiable if the public entity uses its own staff? I'm assuming the city certainly uses its own staff. So that school district, even though they thought, well, we did it all internally, there's still a cost to that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, again, the short answer to your question is yes, those costs can be counted. That's the distinction between the ice storm problem and the confusion that we had down in Nobles County with straight time versus overtime. But from that point forward, or from a point forward, which includes this disaster, the school district could take that straight time, those school workers that worked X number of hours to clear debris, and that can count as eligible expenses. The follow-on, I guess, or the next part of what I anticipate a question is, if a county later comes up with the documentation and we are able to assess that they do exceed their damage indicator, that $3.45 per capita, we can, again, appeal to FEMA to add the county to the disaster. So if Ramsey County can get to their damage indicator, we can make a very good case to FEMA to add them as a designated county.
But, Mr. Chair, I wasn't anticipating that answer, so now I do have to follow up. But the point is, since Ramsey County's, even their current level of damage is a little over $1.4 million, that money wouldn't, there wouldn't be sufficient money reflected in this bill, if you're saying that could actually happen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, you are correct, and I would anticipate that during a regular session, we would have to come back with a deficiency request. The $4.5 million, as Director Ide discussed during the working group, that number was locked in July when FEMA left. But, you know, they will pay up to 75% of the actual reimbursable costs, and assumedly the legislature would do the same. So you're right that the 4.5 appropriation, if everything worked out perfectly, would probably come up $250,000 to $300,000 short in that scenario. But we would come back, as we have in the past, with a deficiency request during the next general session, or when that deficiency became identified.
Mr. Kelly, just a question. You know, much of what's been discussed, the working group and here today, are problems with FEMA and the formulas that they use. And I guess the example that Representative Hausman brings up with Ramsey County is a good example, where you have communities within Ramsey County that are hard hit, but yet when you spread those formulas across the whole county, they're not eligible. And so my question is, how do you work with the feds when you show that, or you can show that there are problems with their formula, to get some of that changed on the federal level? Is that going to be up to us legislators to contact our congressional delegation, or is that something that you work on internally with FEMA so that they become aware of some of the problems that we've encountered?
Mr. Chair, members, I think that the solution to that would have to come on the legislative congressional side. The FEMA folks are following the Code of Federal Regulations that is written to deal with disasters. So they've got a rule book that they have to follow that is basically approved by Congress. We could certainly make FEMA aware of the challenges that we face, but when their approach from the federal level is to declare states and designate counties, that's going to be problematic to get them to change, to go down, and that's my personal opinion, to go down to the community level. And at this point, we follow the federal rules. So again, it's a potential topic of discussion for state, you know, the state disaster statutes, if you will, as to, for things that don't qualify for FEMA, what would the legislature like, what kind of aid would they like to be provided to communities, which would be a great topic.
And some of these issues have to surface in other states. What comes to my mind is, you know, the lobbying arm for the legislative bodies is the NCSL, and then there are other commissions as well. And then we at times work with our own congressional delegation, but I think some of these formula changes go beyond our own borders, and we would probably need some sort of a group in Washington that would be raising these questions and advocating for the states for some of these problems that have to be surfacing, I think, in other states as well. But I'll stop there, and I'll Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just dropped my glasses. I probably won't be able to give you a line number citation. I have a question on the bill as it's introduced relative to the Ramsey County issue. If you look at the language on page 1, lines 11 and 12, it looks like that you still allow for this money to go to counties if they're added. So if Representative Hausman working with her locals, maybe the school district damages weren't in the original dollar amount, and Ramsey County did reach that per capita threshold, her county should be able to tap into some of that $4.5 million in the meantime. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, that is correct, and that language is inserted there for precisely that reason, because things do change as recoveries unfold. So, and they would be, if they're added, they're designated, they'd be just as eligible for the original 4.5 as any of the other designated counties. Yes, ma'am.
All righty, thank you.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then Representative Poppe renews her motion that special session House File 1 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. With that, the meeting is adjourned.
No, I really can't be here today.